This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made.
And good evening, this is David Swanson at the People Speak Radio, and it is our honor to have with us this evening a longtime member of the U.S. House and Senate and the 1972 Democratic nominee for the presidency of the United States, former Senator George McGovern. Senator, it's an honor to have you on the program.
Well, it's my pleasure.
I know you have very limited time, so I'd love to just jump right into it. I'd like to try to, if we can, touch on the issues of peace and impeachment and the work that you're now doing with the McGovern Center, which people can find at McGovernCenter.com. And I would start by noting that a couple of years ago now, you and William Polk put out a book called Out of Iraq that laid out a fairly detailed plan for how we might completely withdraw from that occupation. And yet we don't see that happening in Washington. And in 1970, you said in the Senate, every senator in this chamber is partly responsible for sending 50,000 young Americans to an early grave. This chamber reeks of blood. So my question is, what does the current Congress smell like, and how do you compare what was happening then with what's happening now?
It's quite similar. The difference is that in the 1960s and 1970s, we had a significant number of senators who were speaking out several times a week against our involvement in the Vietnam War. This time, you have a few making an occasional reference to it, but not very often. So there is that noticeable difference to me, and I find that difficult to understand, because this war in Iraq is every bit as foolish and unnecessary as was the war in Vietnam, and I think that it would do great credit to the Senate and to the House if we had more people speaking out even on a daily basis about the tragedy of this involvement in Iraq.
Former Senator Gravel, who was in the Senate in those days and who's running for president, although not succeeding very well, seems to be of a similar mind, that the senators ought to be making speeches and pushing bills and passing legislation to criminalize this occupation. But then there are those in the peace movement who take the position that, well, such a bill is guaranteed to be vetoed, and it would only take 41 senators to stand up and filibuster any further funding of the occupation, and that would cut it off. What would be your ideal scenario? What advice do you offer to members of the Senate today?
If you want an ideal scenario, it would be for the Senate Foreign Relations Committee to do what it did in the 1960s and 1970s, and that's to conduct a thoroughgoing investigation of the conditions under which we entered the war in Iraq, how that intervention has played out, and what are the most practical ways for terminating our involvement there. We have had no such investigation by any congressional committee, even though this war in Iraq has now dragged on longer than World War II.
As you know, Senator Rockefeller was pushing hard when the Democrats were in the minority a year and a half ago for an investigation of how we got into Iraq and what how we were misled by the current administration. And yet, as soon as the Democrats were in the majority, we haven't heard another word about it. How do you explain that shift?
Well, that's the irony. I think just about every student and commentator on American politics agreed that the Democrats got control of both the House and the Senate in the 2006 midterm elections because of the unpopularity of the war and because many Americans wanted that war terminated. So it worries me somewhat that after the Democratic takeover following the 2006 elections, we have made no progress towards terminating that war. As a matter of fact, hard to believe, we have more troops in Iraq today than we had at the time of the 2006 elections when voters indicated their disapproval of the war.
There were indications even then and right after those elections from people like Rahm Emanuel in the Washington Post and elsewhere that the Democrats' strategy was going to be to keep it going for 2 years in order to run against it again this coming November. I don't know how many shared that strategy, but it seems to be the end result. Is that going to be helpful or hurtful to the Democrats electorally, apart from morally? Is that going to succeed? Are they going to be able to run again against the occupation that they ran against 2 years prior?
I think this. Anyone who would seriously recommend that we continue a war in order to exploit it politically should not be in high office. Stop to think what is being proposed here, that we continue to sacrifice the lives of young Americans, that we can continue to slaughter people in Iraq, the Iraqi civilian population, that we continue to spend $250 million a day on this mistaken project in Iraq. I just can't imagine any right-thinking person proposing that it's a good political strategy to deliberately keep a war going so you can exploit it in the next election.
Well, of course, they argue that they are powerless to do anything about it because they don't have the votes to override a veto, and the option of blocking the funding with a filibuster is not on the radar screen. So clearly no one is publicly arguing that they should keep the war going, but they aren't even doing what you suggest in holding an investigation. And that perhaps leads into our second topic, because were the Senate Foreign Relations Committee or any House or Senate committee to hold such an investigation, we know by now that many witnesses would not show up, documents would not be produced, witnesses would show up and leave their memories behind, or simply announce the arrogant assertion of unconstitutional powers, knowing that nothing would come of it, unless perhaps it was an impeachment hearing and executive privilege was off the table and the cameras were on. How do you relate these two topics? You came out with an op-ed in the Washington Post January 6th that made quite a lot of noise, news stories about it everywhere, advocating for impeachment. Do you see this as a way to end the occupation, or are these separate issues? How does it relate?
Well, what I was trying to do with that article is to, first of all, make clear that Bush and Cheney have both been guilty of impeachable offenses. It's an impeachable offense to deliberately mislead the Congress, the American public, and the national press as to the necessity of going to war in Iraq, arguing, to use their phrase, that it was an imminent threat, that they had weapons of mass destruction or an imminent threat to the United States. First of all, we now know they had no such weapons. The international arms inspectors who had been in there for several years told us they had no such weapons. I think practically the entire world knew there were no such weapons, as witness the refusal of the United Nations and the main body of the international community to support our intervention. So what I was trying to do is to establish that there were grounds for impeachment that were probably stronger than one that led to the impeachment of Richard Nixon. I didn't give that article to the Washington Post thinking that we really would have an impeachment action, because I don't find the sentiment for it in either the House or the Senate. But I thought that somebody ought to make the case that we have a very serious problem here with both a president and a vice president who are breaking the Constitution, breaking federal law, and doing it in a most fraudulent manner. And I thought at least by writing a major article of that kind, I could get people to thinking a little more seriously about what's going on in the country.
Well, it certainly helped towards that end. Were you aware, by the way, that the week before the Post printed that, they refused to print a similar op-ed by three current members of the House Judiciary Committee advocating for impeaching the vice president?
I heard about that later, but I did not know that at the time I submitted my article.
I don't know whether all of the angry phone calls the Post received over refusing to print that one helped with printing yours, but in any case, it was extremely helpful. And you went into a lot of issues other than the war, but I have a question about impeachment and ending wars, because there are those, including Dan Ellsberg, who make the case that the threat of impeachment and that the fear that Nixon expresses in the tapes of the threat of impeachment actually helped with moving other pieces of legislation forward, with convincing the president to back off on vetoes, including a veto of the ultimate cutting off of the funding of that war. Do you see that story having worked that way at all? Do you think that impeachment helped or hurt the process of ending the Vietnam War, or was really after the fact and not terribly relevant?
Well, Nixon, at the time of impeachment, had already removed most of the troops from Vietnam. He was pulling troops out all during 1972 presidential campaign. I think he realized the war had gone sour. So the impeachment was not aimed so much at stopping the war as was and pointing out that all kinds of illegal procedures had been used, many of which were related to the war, some of which were not related directly to the war. I think the war created a kind of a us against them psychology in the White House that may have produced some of the things that later led to President Nixon's impeachment.
Well, and of course he was running in that election against a candidate who had a platform much stronger than anywhere seen now from candidates still in the race. Withdraw all the troops and cut
That's
military
correct.
Spending by 37%, if I have my facts correct. And it would seem that after the fact, we did eventually withdraw all the troops and accept there's pretty general consensus that that's what we needed to do and ought to have done it sooner, so that you were in effect proved right. What is your sense of having been vindicated despite having lost the election?
Well, you know, it is pleasant in a sense to be vindicated, but I would have rather had my position prevail during the campaign and send me to the White House rather than to get vindication by drawing the point that if people had just listened to me, we wouldn't have had to go through all this tragedy. But I did feel thoroughly vindicated on the Vietnam War. It's interesting that during that period, my children, I had four daughters and one son, they ganged up on me one night and said, "This thing is hopeless, Dad. Why don't you just speaking against it? It's not doing any good. this thing's a tragedy. I said, well, there's one good thing about this. It is such an obvious tragedy, we'll never go down that path again. Or doing the same thing again.
We are indeed. And yet there's so many who have learned the lesson, including yourself. And you and William Polk lay out beautifully in this book, Out of Iraq, a plan to get us out of there responsibly and quickly and completely. And I know that you and Mr. Polk have both been to Capitol Hill to promote it, and I've not seen much mention in the media, in the standard corporate broadcast television news or in the newspapers, that such plans, and this is not the only one, even exist or even conceivable.
One thing that drove me up the wall after that book came out, and it was a short book, you know, we deliberately held it to a brief maximum because we wanted wide readership, and we kept the price down by agreeing to bring it out in paperback. But even after that book came out, which clearly spells out a common sense way to get every American soldier out of Iraq in an orderly manner, I continued to see articles by commentators and others saying, well, people want to end the war, but nobody has told us how we do that. It infuriated me as an author and a rather well-known political figure in this country, just as it infuriated Professor Polk, one of our top Middle East experts in the entire world, to have to read that in the press and on television, radio, and else, saying nobody's come up with a plan to get us out. But I don't know what you can do other than publish a book like that and hope for the best.
How do you compare that situation to the media we had in 1972? I mean, one of the nastiest voices that seems to be out there to damage anything he can today in the media is Bob Novak, who back then announced that your campaign stood for amnesty, abortion, and acid. And yet, at that time, you were able to get your voice into the media as well as something of a counter to voices like Novak's. How do you compare that to the media today?
Well, I think that the media has gone pretty slow on Iraq. We've had articles about it. Some we've had a few great columns. This man, Paul Krugman, has been terrific on the war, and others have been very effective about it. I don't quite know how to compare it with the media in the Vietnam War, other than to say I think the critical media had a lot to do with finally forcing an end to the war in Vietnam, and if we eventually get out of Iraq, the media deserves some significant credit for that.
Well, I hope we do. There, of course, are primaries all over the country tomorrow, and you chaired a commission in 1969 that did some restructuring of how the Democratic Party bases its nomination on primaries and caucuses. Is that system still in place, and how do you think it's working?
Yes, it's still in place, and I think generally it's working pretty well. One thing that we didn't recommend that has crept into our presidential selection process is this so-called front loading of the state primaries, where too many of the states have rushed to be first or second or third. So you have 22 primaries tomorrow in 22 separate states. That's completely at odds with the spirit and the intent of our Reform Commission of 1969 to 1972, and I regret that very much. The most important thing in our reforms was to require that the delegate selection process that determines who our nominee is going to be had to be open to men and women alike, that it had to be open to blacks and Hispanics and other minority groups, that it had to be open to young people. In other words, we said that a state delegation going to the national committee to select the presidential nominee has to be reasonably representative of the population of that state. We didn't set up any percentage quotas. We didn't say it has to be 51% female and 50%.
All circuits are busy. Please try your call again later. Announcement 8.
Join us on the People Speak Radio Show every Tuesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern, for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of science, spirituality, activism, politics, literature, healing, entertainment, and education. Make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak, Tuesdays, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
Maybe you and me.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. Economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the table, by the relief of the summer people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land from California.
And this is David Swanson back with you at the People Speak Radio, where our guest has been former Senator George McGovern from South Dakota, who had another call on his cell phone, which was the reason for the sudden disconnection. And he also has an incredibly busy schedule and is not going to be able to continue the interview further this evening. Senator McGovern has a center that is doing tremendous amounts of work on a wide variety of issues that I had hoped we could talk about in some detail, but you can learn about it yourself by going to McGovernCenter.com. Senator McGovern was born in South Dakota in 1922. He was an Army pilot in World War II. He has a Ph.D. in history. He served in the U.S. House from 1956 to 60. He was the director of President Kennedy's Food for Peace program. He then served in the United States Senate from 1962 to 1980. And as we discussed, he, of course, in 1970 proposed an amendment to withdraw all troops from Vietnam, something we have not seen any current senator do for Iraq. In 1972, he was the nominee for president, in a campaign in which his running mate became a scandal and his opponent used dirty tricks that included the Watergate break-in, but he ran on a platform better than we have seen since, and most of which has been vindicated by more recent events. He later served as U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Agencies. He's the author of many books, primarily on the topics of food and peace. And his most recent, which we discussed, is excellent, Out of Iraq, A Practical Plan for Withdrawal Now, by George McGovern and William R. Polk. This is David Swanson at a nation at thepeoplespeakradio.com. I almost named another program, thepeoplespeakradio.net. And tomorrow's guest on the People Speak Radio will be Senator Hillary Clinton's former presidential campaign co-chair, William Shaheen. Thanks for being with us.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the city wall, by the relief fountain, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.